claim from Fauci is that the COVID was natural and that came from bats. He was saying this publicly, while behind the scenes, he knew different.
The sequences in bats as they evolve and the mutations that it took to get to the point where it is now is totally consistent with a jump of a species from an animal to a human.
Here's the truth. Only two of the 12 scientists who he was talking with thought that that was the case, and Fauci knew it. He wrote in his diary, there was not total agreement about the likelihood of deliberate insertion. Ron Fouchier said he was sure that this could occur naturally and we should not waste our time and divert effort to pursue this. This is expected of him since he was original GOF person with Yoshi Kawoka. Also, Christian Drosten was with Ron. The rest felt that deliberate insertion was possible. Here's the next claim.
Is it exploding bat?
Again, this is what he was claiming publicly versus what he knew behind the scenes at that moment in time. It's not he did the best with what we had. He lied about what we had. It could not be more clear. He said publicly the virus could have, in many cases, very originated in a wet market.
Beijing acknowledges now that they don't think it originated in that market.
Well, it may not have originated in the market, but it certainly could have. I mean, I don't think that they admitted that it didn't originate in the market. I think they're saying they don't know how it originated.
Yeah. Look at his face.
I didn't get new talking points.
Yeah. Well, there were clusters that may have been picked up and transmitted, as I understand it, through the market. Yeah. But the place of origin was not within the market itself.
No, I don't think you could say that. I don't think you can say that.
Here's the truth. She can say it because Fauci said it. And China said it 2 years earlier than that interview. Fauci said, I don't think you can say what I said in private and was agreed upon by the Chinaman. Sure she can.
Yeah, his face looked like, how did you know that?
How did you?
Who did you talk to?
Where'd you get more soup? January 2020. Check the references. Fauci wrote, early on, the Chinese were saying that there is no human-to-human transmission, and all the original 27 cases were from the market. Now we know the market was not the source. It was the amplifier. George was very sensitive and understandably defensive since he was the one who said early on that there was no human-to-human transmission and that the original 27 cases specifically enumerated in my diary, 27 cases in the wet market reported on December 31st, 2019 were animal-to-human when actually all 27 cases were human-to-human transition. Oh, sorry, they were occurring before, weeks before. Here's the next claim versus what he was claiming publicly versus what he knew privately. The claim that the NIH never funded gain of function at Wuhan. It's not that we've been arguing about this. It's that he acknowledged it and lied.
Dr. Fauci, do you still support funding of the NIH funding of the lab in Wuhan?
Senator Paul, with all due respect, you are entirely and completely incorrect that the NIH has not ever and does not now fund gain-of-function research in the Wuhan Institute.
Here's the truth. They conducted it. They funded it. Fauci recorded it.
Oh.
He just tries to claim in that it doesn't meet the technical definition. So here's him actually writing about it. He writes, EcoHealth was late in submitting a progress report of their grant. I should specify in writing for those who don't understand that grant means financial compensation.
Money.
Progress report of their grant and mentioned in the letter that some of the mice in the study had increased in viral growth and got sicker. Later on, he goes, in other words, by our definition, them getting sicker with the virus we use being funded by NIH was not gain of function.
Can you believe it?
It's the girls from our shirts, Cletus.
Yeehaw! Look at that! Hell yeah!
We matched!
I think they liked us. We should go back!
AlexJonesStore.com, your one-stop shop for exclusive deals and products. Visit the site now and save big.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen. This is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. We are coming to you live on the Alex Jones Network, AlexJonesLive.com. You can also find us on X at AJN Live. I'm at Harrison H. Smith. You can also go to Real Alex Jones. And, of course, the AlexJonesStore.com is where you go to support us. I'm very, very excited to have my guest, Carlin Boroshenko. I did it, Carlin. I got your name right. I don't know. I develop a learning disability with Carlin Boroshenko's name. I always want to read it, Carolyn, but I got it right that time, and I should have just moved on coolly. Carlin Boroshenko is an analyst and independent journalist covering the far left in America. Over the last 5 years, she's going undercover with Antifa all over the country, infiltrating hundreds of online leftist meetings, and has secretly recorded thousands of hours of their discussions to expose their language and how they're organizing. You can follow her on X at Dr. Carlin B. Dr. Carlin, how are you?
I'm doing very well, Harrison. How are you?
I'm doing very well. But, you know, normally when I have a guest on, you know, before they come on, I get the different articles that they're coming on to talk about together. Here's the problem. Nobody's reporting on what you report on. I go through Drudge, nothing there. There's nothing on Postmillennial. There's nothing on Gateway Pundit. There's nothing anywhere about what you're covering, which is what's going on in Madison, as well as the behind the scenes organization being done by the left. You are a unique voice out there, which is why I think it's important to highlight your work. Tell us, what are you covering these days?
Yeah, I mean, it is absolutely mind-blowing to me that no one else is covering this. About a week ago, I covered what I thought was going to be a small protest in Madison, Wisconsin, in response to a police shooting of a black criminal who owed over $50,000 in child support, has beat multiple women, is not a good guy, was resisting arrest, and then stabbed a police officer with a giant chef knife, and then he got himself shot. And of course, the entire leftist infrastructure in Madison, Wisconsin, has responded with a Black Lives Matter protest. And I thought it was going to be a relatively small protest when I decided to cover it live. And then I showed up and there were 2,000 people there on a Wednesday afternoon in Madison, Wisconsin. And I said, okay, this might be a little bit of a bigger problem than I originally thought. And almost immediately in Madison, they started building a little autonomous zone in the middle of the city in which they were erecting a shrine to this guy that got shot by the police. And they've now taken over several city blocks. And the most mind-boggling thing to me is literally no one else is talking about this. We are seeing the start of what could be potentially BLM part two, and no one seems to care.
It is so bizarre. And even just the way you laid it out there, it's like, this is like a ceremony we do now. If the cops kill a black man, you have to clear out a section of your city and build a shrine and do a religious ordination or something. It's so bizarre. 'Cause yeah, if you read the case, I mean, George Floyd, I think we all agree, like, we don't have the actual facts on the record about that. I don't believe he was killed by the police. You can debate about it. The video looked bad, whatever. In this case, the dude stabbed a cop. It's like, and you expect them to, what, politely ask he stop? It's so crazy that this is the type of, you know, police killing that gets mass support. What is it about this case that is drawing so much attention? Do you have any idea?
Yeah, it's not about this case in particular. It's not even about this person in particular. This is what the left does. Every time they have an opportunity to make the case to abolish the police or defund the police, they are going to do it. And if they have to lift up a criminal martyr in order to do it, then they have no problem doing that. Because what you have to understand about the far left is abolishing and defunding the police is one of their central organizing tenets. It is the thing that they will never give up on because they believe that the police are the protectors of capitalist society and they can't overthrow capitalism without getting rid of the police. So this just happened to be an opportune moment for them to take advantage of, and they absolutely have.
And obviously, maybe one of the reasons it's not getting as much attention is because the right wing is like looking for ICE protests. Like it almost seems weird that they're protesting Black Lives Matter. It's like, I thought we moved on to ICE at this point. But obviously, it's the same people driven by a lot of the same motives. I'm sure you're seeing a lot of overlap between the ICE protests that we've been seeing over the last couple of years and the protests happening here. How do these two groups play with each other?
Yeah, that's a great question. To the far left, these two things are actually one and the same. And so, of course, they've been doing anti-ICE organizing for about a year and a half now. This has been going on all across the country. But what people need to understand about the language of the left is the left hates the police for exactly the same reason they hate ICE. ICE are the protectors of capitalism because they are protectors of the border. The border represents capitalism to the left. They hate the police because the police are the managers of private property. That's their definition of capitalism. And so for the left, of course, they're going to take advantage of an opportunity to kind of get one of their biggest enemies in, which, again, the police, ICE to them are one and the same. So, yeah, this is exactly the same protest. It's just being framed a little bit differently.
And it's obviously not getting attention from the right, as we've been complaining about. And you've been doing a great job, on your own. And literally, I think you're the only person I've heard talk about this. Literally, I think you're the only one. But that includes people on the left, too. Am I just missing things, or are the left kind of treating this in a little bit more of a low key way as well?
Oh, no, the left is totally on top of this. In fact, I mean, one of the things that's so funny about this is people might remember that giant BLM fist statue,
right,
that was in Minnesota in George Floyd Square in 2020. They actually shipped that giant statue to Madison, Wisconsin, and it is currently erected in the autonomous zone in Madison, Wisconsin. We're going to be able to see it in this video. I think there's been video of it. I'm not sure if you guys have the right one. But yeah, that fist is in Madison right now, and they're actually, there's Antifa coming from all over the region. There it is right there. Antifa is coming all over the region into the city, including the artist that created that fist statue in the first place. So if you go on to Instagram is really one of the main organizing platforms of the far left, which seems a little bit weird. You think it would be Blue Sky, but it's not. You can go down many leftist rabbit holes and find all their different far left groups posting about this. It's something that they are very excited about.
Yeah. Okay. So maybe I am just missing. That's where you come in. You actually go into these spaces and report on what you find. I guess I'm lucky. I avoid the leftist content for the most part, but it's leaving us blind to what's actually going on. Again, there's just something that feels weird about this. That before I was looking at your coverage, nobody saw this. And then you look at it, and it's like it's an autonomous zone. There's tons of people showing up. They have statues. This is a big deal, and yet it's going totally unaddressed. What does this portend, do you think? Like, is this going to keep going? Do you think this is the beginning, the snowball rolling down the hill? Are we going to see another, summer of love for the second half of this season? Or, what is their plan? What are they trying to achieve with this?
So I don't know if this is going to snowball into a national summer of love as we saw it last time. And I think that might just be a timing issue. I mean, people are getting ready to go back to college in a couple weeks. And so that might be just a timing snafu on their part. But the thing that is in Madison specifically, what people need to understand is the city is completely supporting this. So that autonomous zone is not going away anytime soon. The city is coordinating with leaders of the autonomous zone to make sure they have services that they need. The city is moving in barricades and salt trucks and all of these things to block off the streets for them. They even brought them porta potties. They're even importing, there's an additional porta potty added every single day at city taxpayer expense to make sure they're nice and comfortable. And the left is setting up tents. They're setting up an encampment there. They're sleeping over. And the city has flat out said that they don't really have any plans to get rid of it anytime soon. And I think on top of that, we have the Wisconsin governor's race that's happening with a DSA candidate, Francesca Hong, who looks like she might actually get the Democratic nomination for governor. And if she does, I think that autonomous zone is there to stay for the foreseeable future. I don't think it's going anywhere.
This is the bizarre thing about it. It's a bunch of fight the power people and all the powerful people going, here's money, here's services. Yep. It's so nonsensical. Let's zoom out a little bit because I want to talk about that because, for the first time, maybe in my life, we have American politicians in just the last few months invoking the specter of communism, literal communism. I mean, this is something that fell out of style, I guess, in the early 90s with the fall of the Soviet Union. It seems like a weird throwback to have Donald Trump be like, communists, these communists are here. So on one side, I'm glad they're aware that, yes, this is literal communism. It is a danger. We should be defending against this. At the same time, just saying that guy's a communist is not enough, right? What is your take on the rise of DSA, the infiltration of communism, the reaction from the Republicans? That's a lot of topics, but, you know, the floor is yours. What is your take on this rise of communism and the reaction?
Yeah, so first, I want to make sure people understand that calling someone a communist is no longer a demonizing term. In fact, the left is really embracing this and saying, yes, we're communists, we're socialists. And by the way, they use that term interchangeably. It means basically the same thing to them. And so they're very proud of this, and they're very proud of all the coverage that we're getting. You know, there was a big, kerfuffle about the DSA, coming out and saying they want to abolish the Senate. I mean, breaking news, Harrison, I've been covering that for 3 years. That is not a new thing from the DSA, but the right has just discovered that they do actually have plans to overthrow the government. And one of the things I want to make sure people understand about this is in Madison, Wisconsin specifically, even though they do have this DSA governor's candidate, the DSA is not leading the encampment and the protest in Madison. In fact, they're flat out saying, we are here to support, we are here to encourage, but we are not actually leading this effort. So the DSA is not the most far left organization that we are dealing with. However, when it comes to elections, certainly they are starting to become a formidable force. The DSA in New York City, I think, is going to be pretty unstoppable. They have spent the last 10 years building an electoral machine to get Zora Mandami into the mayor's office in New York City. They made millions of phone calls. They had over 50,000 active volunteers. They knocked on millions of doors. They went into neighborhoods that were previously underserved. They did literally the ground game that, quite frankly, the Republicans could do, but refused to for reasons beyond my understanding. And they're doing everything right. And after they had so much success electorally in New York, they started teaching DSA chapters all over the country how to do exactly the same thing. And the DSA National has actually been raising money for local candidates. They've been doing phone banking. They raise money via dues. The DSA National just handed out grants in 20 cities all over the country to open local DSA offices. And these are not just in blue states. These are in red states, too. There's one in Tampa, Florida. There's one in Birmingham, Alabama. I think there's one in Boise, Idaho. So they are not just focusing on blue areas at all. And so the DSA electorally is very excited and very energized. And quite frankly, that Fox News interview that conservatives were like, oh, we got them to admit what they're going to do, even though they've been saying it publicly for years, quite frankly. The DSA is psyched about that. If you go on their social media, they're like, yeah, we went on Fox News and we told them exactly what we wanted to do. And they just think it's great.
Yeah. And this is why the response from Trump in particular is so baffling. And one thing he said sort of when the Democrat socialist sort of swept a bunch of elections in New York earlier this month, last month, whenever it was recently. And Trump basically said, you know, this is a good thing for us because the socialists are so crazy. Normal people won't vote for them and they'll come over to the Republicans. I think this is so disconnected with reality. It's so out there. What's your take on that first? Because the interesting twist to this is that a lot of the socialists are portraying themselves as more normal, right? You think of Abigail Spanberger in Virginia, ran as a total moderate, governs like Mao. So what is their strategy? Are they coming out and saying, hey, we're radical socialists, you vote for us? Are they hiding their power level and trying to just appear as moderates? But first, what is your response to Donald Trump thinking that socialists are so crazy, this will be a boon for Republicans?
Donald Trump has no idea what's going on. And I am fully convinced no one in the Trump administration is actually hinged into reality, because everything I hear coming out of the Trump administration about the far left, the DSA and Antifa, it's all completely wrong. They don't know where they're funded. They don't know how they're organizing. They don't know how they're showing up in the world. And quite frankly, if the Trump administration doesn't start hinging into reality, I just don't even know what to say. In fact, you know, in response to Donald Trump saying these people are so crazy, I mean, the fact of the matter is, when Zora Mandami was campaigning for the mayoral nomination, they went into MAGA voting areas in New York City and they specifically targeted people that had voted for Donald Trump in 2024. And they went in and they said, hey, listen, we know we're socialists and you guys might not agree with us, but we think affordability in New York City is a big problem. And here are the ideas we have to make things more affordable in New York City. And guess what? The Republicans weren't even talking to these people in New York City because they completely gave up on it. And so they actually, the DSA GSA internal stats, I believe they said they got like 70% of the Trump voters that they actually went and talked to end up voting for Zoran Mamdani. Not only in they got people to like switch over to like vote in the primary, but then they got people to vote for him in the general election as well, because they were speaking explicitly about the issue of affordability. This seems to be something that the Trump administration has completely abandoned. And they think that if they just call someone a communist, that's going to be enough to get people to turn against them. But the fact of the matter is normal people are struggling and they are waiting for someone to make life more affordable for them. And the DSA is speaking directly to this every single day. And the Trump administration and MAGA are not. So is it any wonder people are voting for them? I mean, they're solving their, they're trying to solve their problems.
100%. And this is why I appreciate your coverage, because, you know, the our regular viewers know you and I are exactly aligned on this, that, you know, there are these real problems that the Republicans are completely uninterested in addressing in any way at all. They really just insult the people making these complaints, even though the complaints are perfectly valid and it's reasonable people who have been, you know, living in their car. We've all seen the videos. Meanwhile, the socialists are there going, you just come with us. We're going to take those guys' stuff and give it to you. It'll be great. Who do you think they're going to go with? So, you know, we're completely aligned on that. I'm just baffled that more people don't get this. Like, is this that hard to understand, Carlin? Are we super geniuses that everybody else is like, how complicated is this? You've got to do something to deal with the very real concerns of the American people, especially the young people who have seen their prospects disintegrate over the last 10 years. How do we make that clear to the Republicans? Is it too late? Like, we'll spend some time here, but in the next segment, I really want to get into strategy, how we stop this. But just on that note alone, like, how do we make this case?
Harrison, I don't know at this point. I feel like I have been screaming into the void for years and years and years, trying to warn people that all this was coming. And from MAGA people, and listen, I get thousands of comments from MAGA people on my social media, on Facebook, Instagram, TikTok, like every single day. They do not take this problem seriously at all. They laugh it off. They make jokes about it. They say, these are paid protesters. They don't have jobs. This is all Soros funded. None of those things are true, by the way. And I think what I see coming out of the Trump administration and the GOP is just more lies about how the left is organizing, just making fun of them. And they think that making fun of them is somehow going to defeat this. And while they are making fun of them and making memes on Twitter, the left just keeps organizing. They just keep their head down. They keep focused on the goal. And if they have an opportunity to do something like they're doing in Madison, Wisconsin, they jump on it and they take it immediately. I mean, they have been able to spin up protests of thousands of people within a day or two. I mean, that is an impressive level of organizing. And like, you know, when I talk about these things, I get MAGA people on my channel saying, oh, this is a really small protest. Okay, have you ever been to a local Republican meeting? Because there might be a couple dozen people there if you're lucky on a good day. So you're calling several thousand people showing up on a Thursday a small protest that doesn't matter, but you guys can't even get a couple dozen people involved. So let's, you know, maybe back up and hinge into reality here.
And take it seriously. Take this threat seriously. You and I seem to be the only ones who are like, no, they're going to do a revolution, guys, and they might win. I went through a bunch of history of communist revolutions. You know, people write it off. They laugh it off. Like you're saying, they just scoff it. You know, these people don't have jobs or whatever. You know, historically, there have been couple dozen attempted communist revolutions. About a third of them succeed. And it's usually the ones that succeed are like the Russian Revolution. It's like the big ones. You know, you'll have a little one in Nicaragua where somebody tries to do something and maybe it fizzles out. But like when you get a big nationwide push of communists over trying to overthrow the government, it's got about a 33% chance of success. And then it becomes a hell of a lot harder from there on out. They just don't know history. We have to understand reality. There is a bull running at us. You can't just scoff at it. You got to take it by the horns. You know, I really don't know how we get this message across, but as you point out, the left just seems to keep their head down, do what they need to do. They're organizing behind the scenes. Meanwhile, we've got Marco Rubio going to Europe and making a big speech about Antifa, but nothing's being done for it. There's no work behind the scenes. There's no just, you know, not, it doesn't have to be spectacular. You just got to plug away and, you know, hey, declare them domestic terrorists. Let's investigate their money supplies. Where are they getting orders from? This seems criminal. Let's go with that. What do we need to do to convince the Republicans, like, stop talking about it, do it? Or even our fellow right wingers, like, you can't laugh at this. You got to be organizing in competition with them. What do we do to fight back here?
Yeah, I think the first thing people really need to understand, and I really hope that someone connected with the Trump administration is watching right now or will see this. Every single thing the Trump administration is putting out about how Antifa is funded is completely wrong. That report from Marco Rubio saying they're funded by Cuba and Iran, they're also saying they're funded by China, that is complete and total garbage. I'm sorry, that's just reality. Antifa is funded by mutual aid. They are funded by small cash donations within the community. They are not funded by nonprofits. They are not funded by NGOs. That is directly contradictory to all of their organizing principles. You can read Dean Spade's book about mutual aid. Dean Spade has probably raised more money for Antifa and the far left than anyone in the country over the past 25 years that them has been an activist. They're a professor at the Seattle School of Law, by the way. This is not an insignificant person. They've literally written the book about how to do this. Train Antifa all over the country about how to do it. The right has never heard of this person and is not paying attention to them at all. And that is where the money is coming from. Mutual aid is not coming from Soros. It is not coming from Never Worry Singham and the CCP. It is coming from the community. And that makes it incredibly difficult to cut off the funding source. And that is why, quite frankly, Harrison, the Trump administration has not cut off the funding. They've been saying for over a year and a half now, we're going to cut off the head of the snake. Well, they haven't done anything. And the reason they haven't done it is because they do not know where the funding is coming from, because they cannot wrap their head around the idea of mutual aid. And so that's going to be step number one. We really have to just start to ground ourselves in the reality of how the far left is actually organizing in the real world. And every single thing coming out of the White House is just wrong. And quite frankly, it is infuriating to me that I am a woman in my second bedroom in a townhouse in New Hampshire, and I seem to know more about this than the FBI does. And so until, again, the Republicans start taking this seriously and they stop lying to their audiences about what is going on, we have no hope of turning this thing around.
100% could not agree with you more. So what do you do about that? Because, you know, mutual aid, and I agree with you, I mean, that seems to be where most of funding is coming from. How do you deal with that? How would you deal with that? If you were, you know, Comrade Poroshenko, the dictator of America, I mean, how is that what it would take? Like, how do you deal with this? If it's just people funding each other, I mean, this is really a quandary.
You know, I mean, this might be controversial, but in my ideal world where I'm the dictator of America, I would round up all of the organizers like all across the country. We're talking about thousands of people here. And I would concentrate them in a camp like area, build a wall around them, prohibit them from publishing, prohibit them from organizing, and prohibit them from interacting with polite society. It may be extreme to say I'd put them all in the concentration camp, but I think that type of thing is actually what is going to be required in order to stop this problem. You have to get them off the streets. Trump has got to arrest far more people than the 15 that he arrested in Minnesota, which, okay, yeah, 15 is a good start, fine, but there are 80,000 far left activists in Minneapolis, Minnesota. Trump arrested 15 of them. And by the way, those 15 people have already raised about $400,000 via a crowdfunding site for their legal defense. And that was all mutual aid. It was all small donations, about an average donation of $100 a pop to fund the legal defense of the 15 Antifa members that were arrested in Minneapolis. So again, they need to be arrested. They need to be prevented from organizing. They need to be taken off the streets entirely. I think that if Trump doesn't invoke the Insurrection Act at some point, there's just no point to any of this.
You got my vote. I mean, I don't disagree with you even a little bit. And, you know, the other thing I found when I was researching the history of communist revolutions, first of all, they succeed a lot more than you'd think. But the other thing I found is they almost never get defeated with anything except for violence. That's just how it is. You know, out of the dozens of attempts and the dozens of successes that they've had overthrowing a government or imposing their rule on an area, it's like four or five of them maybe got ended with negotiation. The vast majority, and everybody knows this, right? 1918 in Germany had to be crushed by the Freikorps. In Spain, the communist revolution had to be crushed by Franco. If you don't crush it, they win. Like, that seems to be the historical standard when it comes to communist revolutions. We have to understand this. And while we may be sort of hamstrung right now because we have freedom of speech, we have, you know, protections that I think are good, it's like if we're hamstrung by these, if these constitutional protections are the reason we can't stop the communists, we really got to make a difficult choice. Do we adhere to the Constitution and become a communist dictatorship? Or do we, hey, we got to do some extreme measures here, but in the pursuit of actually having a constitution at the end of this? More on the other side.
And a microscopic tag being planted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Colin saying 21 years ago that, oh yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha ha ha, wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more, scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Getmasterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does. And people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.
Welcome back. Ladies and gentlemen, this is War Room Live. I'm your host, Harrison Smith. Folks, if you're not watching at the Alex Jones Network, you might not have any idea that there is an autonomous zone Black Lives Matter protest happening in Madison, Wisconsin. I myself would have no idea about this, except for my guest, Carlin Borashenko, who, lucky for us, spends her times exploring the fetid swamps of leftist internet culture to find out what they're actually up to and what they're actually doing. Cannot encourage you enough to go follow Carlin, Dr. Carlin B, that's DrKarlynB on X, decodetheleft.com. And of course, you can find all of her other, you know, great work there. Again, just incredible coverage. And you go there on the ground, you do undercover work. It's really spectacular stuff, and I can't encourage it enough, like I said. But we're facing a big problem here, and I sort of laid it out at the end of the last segment, but like I don't have an answer to this. I don't know if you do either. Let me lay out first. I love the Constitution. I genuinely treat the Constitution like a sacred document. I got it hanging up next to my bed. I think it is the greatest document man has ever produced. It came out of one of the greatest generation of men to ever produce a capstone of our civilization. Now, that being said, when I hear Anthony Fauci invoke the Fifth Amendment so he doesn't have to talk about lying the American people into lockdowns that destroyed people's lives, I have to question its usefulness at this point. When the Constitution is used only to hamstring the right, an attempt to impose order and get back to justice, and the left seems capable of doing whatever they want, whenever they want. Here's how I put it, Carlin. People who love the Constitution are going to have to break the Constitution so we can save the Constitution from people who hate the Constitution. Does that make sense? Is that a good argument? Because we're in trouble here.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. In an ideal world with rainbows and unicorns where everyone gets a pony, I think the Constitution is great, right? And in my heart of hearts, I'm a free speech absolutist. I want everyone to be able to say whatever they want. But the thing of it is that does not work in practicality. And it does not work when we have a very active and significant far left uprising going on in the country all over the place in almost every single state, in almost every single major city, in every single state, including red areas. And what people need to understand, and this is why I harp so much on the language of the left. When the left says capitalism, as in overthrowing capitalism, they don't just mean seizing the means of production in the factories. The left believes that the Constitution and the United States government are built on capitalism, that they cannot overthrow capitalism until they overthrow these things. So it was crazy for me to watch the right just realize the other day with the DSA video that, oh, they want to overthrow the government. Yes, they talk about this openly all the time. I have them on video from 3 years ago saying they're going to raise the red flag of communism above the White House when they take things over in their little coup. And I really do believe they're going to try to do that, Harrison. I believe we've got 10 to 15 years before the far left actually tries to overthrow the government. I do not believe the Civil War is going to be red versus blue, mostly because Republicans don't really do anything. They threaten to do things. They claim they're going to do things. They say, we have all the guns and they won't come into our town and all these things. But then they don't actually do anything. The real civil war in America is going to be radical revolutionary socialists versus the federal government. And I think when they go, they're going to win. And I think they're going to win rather easily because they've been preparing this for literally decades. And I don't think people understand how dire this problem is and how much we need to start fighting back and providing an actual opposition to the far left. Because right now, the reason they are winning is there is no opposition to what they're doing at all.
And it really, you know, it wouldn't be that hard, honestly, if Trump and Marco Rubio, if they believed what they say. I mean, they treat communism, they, in their words, they say, hey, this is an existential threat. This is really bad. Why aren't you treating it like that? If they were to treat it with the seriousness with which they talk about it, I don't think it'd be that hard. You know, you find the people on the left who are doing the bad stuff. You bring them in. Hey, you got to, you know, give us some information or you're going down for this. You do some RICO cases. I mean, these people are criminals, a lot of them. And OK, sure, we can imprison the Antifa members who actively stage an ambush and fire guns at ICE. We did. We got, you know, we convicted a couple of them when they were actively involved in a plot that actually tried to kill a bunch of ICE officers. It's like that is not enough. And we have not gone over the communist revolution. We've not gone over that cliff edge. There is still time. They're still in that organizational phase. But the seriousness isn't there to actually deal with this. And I don't know if it ever will be since they're making these inroads. And as you've laid out, I mean, how much money have they spent planting offices in every big city? I know you posted about it before, but I mean, it's millions of dollars. So we have to take this seriously, the seriousness with which they're taking it. And they fully intend to literally take over the government, abolish the Supreme Court, pack the Supreme Court, abolish the Senate. Like they're doing things or promoting policies explicitly and really can only serve to impose unconstitutional things on us. Why do you think they want to pack the Supreme Court? So they can do unconstitutional things. This is extremely bad, like we've been saying. But how much money have they spent? I know you know the amounts.
Yeah, it was hundreds of thousands of dollars in grants that came out of DSA National to go to these local DSA chapters, but they're also doing additional fundraising on top of that. And I think that, you know, people really don't realize where, I mean, let's focus in on the DSA specifically and talk about where they're getting their money. Because again, it's not Soros, it's not NGOs, it's not Neville Roy Singham and the CCP, it's not any of that. The DSA is funded by dues-paying members that pay the national organization on average about $15 a month to have voting privileges in the organization. They also separately pay dues into their local DSA chapter, like $5 a month, $15 a month, something like that. So let's play a little game called Fun with Math, Harrison. The DSA National just passed 120,000 dues-paying members. And by the way, that's up from 100,000 dues-paying members in February. So they've grown an additional 20,000 dues-paying members since February of this year. If you do 120,000 times $15 a month times 12 months in a year, that equates out to $21 million in annual dues that they are getting just from $15 a month dues-paying members. That is where they are getting their money from. They are also doing additional fundraising and phone banking. The DSA started an initiative last year called Socialist Cash Beats Capitalist Trash, where they were calling DSA members all over the country and saying, hey, can you just throw in a couple extra bucks for us? The DSA later tonight is actually doing a whole live phone banking thing on a meeting they're having where they get people on a Zoom call, they have a politician come to speak, and then they say, okay, guys, we're all going to go do phone calls now, and they have a national system set up where they can get thousands and thousands of people on these meetings, and they just start making phone calls to other DSA members asking them for money, and they're willing to give it because right now they are very energized. And so, and that is just one group on the left. There are dozens and dozens of groups on the left that are quite frankly more leftist and more dangerous than the DSA that are doing mutual aid funding. We saw this again in Minneapolis, Minnesota. There are over 80,000 anti-ICE activists in Minneapolis, Minnesota alone that are all organized into these signal groups that are making small cash donations, that are making food for each other, that are paying each other's rent if the illegal immigrants don't want to leave their house and stuff like that. And so, I mean, I do really think the first step to fixing this problem is people have got to stop lying about how this is funded. I mean, I really think that people who are pushing these conspiracy theories about NGOs and Iran and Cuba and Neville Roy Singham and the CCP, they are actually doing so much harm to our ability to fight the left because it leaves people on the right believing that all of these protesters don't really believe in anything, that they're all paid to be out there. They are not paid. They're really not. They're out there because this is what they believe. They're passionate about what they're doing. This is their life. This is their community. These are their social, this is their social circle. These are their friends. They have built an entire, you know, several years ago, the right was talking about building this parallel economy, right? The left has actually built the parallel economy that the right thought that they should build. They've actually done this. And this is how they are so powerful and why they are doing what they're doing.
Yeah. And again, it makes it that much more difficult to stop. And the only place I disagree with you is that obviously these I think there are these NGO networks that are also funding them. But I think you're exactly right not to focus on that, because obviously $21 million a year is, and that's just the dues paying members. That's not the additional funding that they can be fundraising on or, you know. So it's like you already have this core people funding themselves, and then that's sort of supercharged with government money, because you've got the teachers union, who's half of them are DSA members. I mean, there's so much sort of incestuous, helping each other out in all of these different organizations. It is a true hydra. It's a gigantic monster. 100,000 to 120,000 in 4 months. That is a big jump. And I think that's evidence of why now is the time. Like, the longer you wait, the harder this gets. And I mean, what are your thoughts? Why did they grow this much? This has to be because they're winning elections, right? People may have scoffed at them before. Now they're winning elections, so they start to get more members, so they start to win more elections, so they gain more money, so they get more members. I mean, again, snowball rolling down the hill. Earlier you stop it, the easier it'll be. What is behind that massive rise? That is an extra one-fifth of the members in just 4 months. That is huge.
I think the election certainly has something to do with it. I also think that the far left is just really good at recruiting people. And I mean, like, I think a lot of people are still stuck in this idea of 2016, like the left camp meme and all that stuff. Right. And it was true back then, they kind of sucked, but they don't suck anymore. And if you go on their social media, they are making very compelling videos in which people are having fun talking about their beliefs. They're engaging with each other. And I say this as someone who, like, I've gone undercover with them more than almost anyone that I know of in the country. When you are at their their events, it is fun. When they think that you are part of them and you agree with them, they treat you very well. It is a very fun community. It is much more fun. Even like, I am not on the left in any way. I am more far right than MAGA people or Trump supporters. I am extremely far right. But when I go to a leftist event, I have a good time being there, as long as they don't discover who I am and try to, you know, beat me up or anything.
Right.
But like, I think that people really do underestimate this. They think that, like, I think right wingers think that because they see clickbait content on the internet about the left being violent, that all leftist events are violent. And that's just not true. In fact, most of the time, leftist events are actually peaceful protests, and everyone is just having a good time hanging out. There's music, so there's games, there's stuff to do. They get to have intellectual conversations with each other about topics that they're excited about. And so I think that just the reality is the left has so much more energy than the right does right now. The right is caught in constant infighting and conflict. We have these MAGA people who are completely unhinged from reality. They're trying to excommunicate everyone else that actually supported Donald Trump before they did. And there's just no, like, who is the right recruiting right now? I mean, honestly, like, there's no events for people to go to. There's no outreach to voters that they could be serving by talking about affordability and actually taking on the real issues of Americans. There's no social events to go to. Trump isn't even doing rallies anymore, so they don't even have that. So the left has all the energy on their side, and the right just has nothing that can even compare to it.
I'm sorry, we just picked up Alan Dershowitz. Thank you very much. He just changed his registration from Democrat to Republican. But seriously, that's sort of emblematic, isn't it? Because there's two big topics that I think are driving this: Israel and capitalism, I guess, for lack of a better word. Now, I think we need to break from our traditional conception of capitalism in the Republican Party. I think we've been completely hoodwinked by the idea of communism versus capitalism, when in reality it should be communism versus America, Americanism. And part of the American government's traditional role is restricting the behavior of capitalistic endeavors, the trust busting, breaking up these big corporations that are taking advantage of the American people. That is a deeply American way to deal with this, because if you don't, you get communism. This false dichotomy of communism versus capitalism, or America versus Israel, or the Republicans versus or Democrats versus Israel, or whatever it is. I guess let's stick with Israel first. How do you think that plays into it? Like, what impact do you think that had on the Mamdani race? And just how do you think that plays into the whole paradigm shift happening right now?
Oh, I think it is one of the central figures of our time, right? It is essential issues of our time. I mean, we're in this war with Iran because of Israel, because we are more beholden to a foreign power than we are to actual American citizens. And I think that a lot of people on both the left and the right are waking up to this issue. And I want to, like, say specifically about the war in Iran, the only anti-war side right now is the left. There is no anti-war movement on the right. And so actually what I've been seeing, Harrison, is there is a growing, increasing movement to recruit veterans to the far left. There are multiple veteran groups on the left. They're About Face is one of them. Veterans Against Fascism is one of them. These are overtly socialist groups that are at very far left events recruiting, that are speaking to veterans who do not want to be involved in this war at all. And I think we just don't have anything to compare that with on the right, because you are not allowed to question the war with Iran. You are not allowed to question Israel's role in that. The other thing I really want people to understand is, even though there might be people who have misgivings about the war and also just our relationship with Israel in general, people on the right have a very different issue with Israel than people on the left do. Same with capitalism. People on the right, and I don't think capitalism is a perfect system by any means, but you and I are going to have very different objections to capitalism than the left would. When the left says capitalism, they explicitly mean private property ownership. They want to abolish our ability to own homes, lands, apartments, private businesses, intellectual property. They even consider parental rights to be a form of capitalism, so they would abolish parental rights over your kids. I don't think that's the problem that you or I have with capitalism. We have issues with crony capitalism, corrupt capitalism, all that stuff. And I do think it's really important for people to understand that. Like, we might be using the same word, but we have different definitions for what is going on. And so, yeah, I mean, I think we're in a conundrum, because again, it's like the Republicans and the Trump administration seem beholden to doing the bidding of Israel over helping Americans, while you have these socialists and communists who are saying, we don't want to be in this war. We want to take all this money that we're spending in Iran, and we want to use it to help Americans make housing more affordable, make food more affordable, make life more affordable, make life better. The Trump administration is simply not competing with that at all.
100% could not agree more. And it's weird, because it's almost like the false dichotomy is being pushed by both these sides, right? You hear the Israeli talking heads go, hey, if you're against Israeli, you know, domination, then you must be a communist. You're no better than AOC. And you've got the socialists saying the same thing. Hey, you're against Israel. Great. You're on our side. Come with us. It's like both these people are pushing this, what I consider to be a false dichotomy, because I think you have a better reason to stand up against Israel from the right, from a national. Anyway, we don't need to get into that exactly, but it plays into what is driving people over to the left, because they look to the right and they see the most evil things they've ever seen in their lives when it comes to Israel. And they see the sickening adherence to the leadership of Israel from the Republican Party. They couldn't design it better if they tried. I mean, honestly, it's like what's happening with the Republican Party. It's like it was designed by Democrats. It's like a bunch of Democrats got in with Trump and went, all right, let's totally destroy the Republican Party by tying it to the hip to Israel and nothing else. Not doing deportations, not doing anything for the American people, but surrendering everything to Israel. I'm a bit of a conspiracy theorist, Carlin. It seems like this is a big setup. I mean, it seems like this is happening on purpose. And I don't know if it is, but they couldn't have designed it better, could they?
It almost seems comically bad that the things that are coming out of the talking heads on the right, and it is infuriating every single day, where it is obvious they're not talking to real people in the real world. They are just issuing a statement on Twitter that is just fundamentally unhinged from what real people want. We want mass deportations. We want to see I want to see ICE going into neighborhoods, loading illegals onto semi trucks, driving them to the airport, loading them on a cargo plane, and flying them back to a third world country in Africa. And I quite frankly don't even care which one. Unload them from the plane and leave them there and don't let them come back. And it's just like, I don't think I'm alone in this assessment, Harrison. And I think that people would really like to see that. But what did the Trump administration do? They fired Greg Bovino, who was like the only good person that actually had a plan to deport 100 million people. And now they put Mark Wayne Mullins in charge of DHS, who apparently is taking orders from Susan Collins in Maine, who just thinks that it's a little bit too much to arrest illegals when you stop them at a traffic stop. And so it's like the fact that Greg Bovino is not in charge of DHS, right? He's not even in the government, but he should be running DHS and he should be running all of what we're doing. I mean, it's one of Trump's worst qualities is his hiring decisions. This was true in his first administration, and we are seeing it again play out in this administration. He hired almost universally the most awful people he could possibly bring in. He's listening to them for reasons beyond my understanding, and that is why we are not getting the mass deportations that we rightfully deserve by giving him another term in office.
100%. And I don't want Kristi Noem standing out yelling at the camera about how they're going to do all this. I want a Merrick Garland type. I want somebody quiet and efficient who's just going to come out and do a little press conference where he goes, here's who we're arresting. We're doing this in line with the Constitution. Good night, everybody. And then I just want to round them up. And it's like we cannot get that done. It's so utterly infuriating. So how do we get this done? I mean, strategically strategizing here. You got something like New York City, DSA mayor. I mean, that started the ball rolling. Now you're in this feedback loop where they're going to start taking buildings from people. They're going to start, you know, forcing. It's not going to be good. Do we abandon New York? Do we just go, all right, let's consolidate, you know, in red states and try to just hold the line? Do we try to retake territory there? Is that even too ambitious? How do we survive the first assault? Like, what is the strategy moving forward here for our, you know, listeners and viewers out there? I don't want to black pill them. The DSA is obviously strong and growing stronger. We have to recognize that if we want to fight it. So how do we fight it? That's the question.
So for me, obviously, I'm not in any position of decision making power, sadly. So I can't say what the Republican Party should do. And they probably wouldn't listen to me anyway. But I think for me, what I'm trying to do, Harrison, is I'm trying to get out there and educate as many people as I can about how the left is actually organizing, what their language means, what their terminology means, how they think about raising money, how they think about activism in the real world. Because I really think that the biggest part of the problem that we face is that right wing audiences have been lied to by their own media for years and years. And because of that, everyone is fundamentally unhinged from reality about what right. The left is doing in the real world. And quite frankly, I don't care what the left was doing 50 years ago or 20 years ago. I care what they are doing and how they are organizing today. And so I'm trying to just educate as many people as I can to try to understand the language, understand the organizing structure, because I think that you cannot adequately fight back against an enemy that you do not understand. And I think, again, until the right right wants to hinge into reality on how the left is raising money, how they are actually organized, that it is horizontal, it is non-hierarchical, it is decentralized, how they are actually working with each other all over the country, what propaganda they're putting out, what talking points they're issuing on any given day, how they are actually coordinating all these efforts. Until we understand the issue that we are dealing with, we cannot actually put tactics in place to defeat them. I also think I hate when I see Republicans just completely ceding the major cities. Like, what are you doing? In New York City, they didn't even attempt to fight back against Zora Mindami. There was no real effort made in New York City at all. And that wasn't just in that mayoral's race. They gave up on New York City a long time ago. And I think if they just started speaking to the issues that real Americans want to hear, I don't think that Americans would readily accept communism as an alternative. But right now, they are literally being given nothing from the Republican Party, and they're being told by the far left, we will fix all your real world problems. So, like, what do you want them to do? So I think this is about really just going back to basics, doing the groundwork. Literally, if Republicans just took what the DSA is doing and copied it for the Republican Party, it would be 1,000 times more effective than what the Republicans are currently doing.
What we're currently doing, I don't even want to get into what we're currently doing. It's like, you know, it's the Trump administration, but it's also we can't help but tearing ourselves down. I guess here in the last 2 minutes, how do we stop killing each other, Carlin? Because we got this such a powerful enemy on the left, and yet all of our energy is spent towards fighting Nick Fuentes or Candace Owens. Or it's like, how do we get over that first?
Hey, listen, Harrison, I've been talking about this lately, but at the last three far left events I've gone to, I'm actually in more danger of being attacked by a MAGA person than I am by leftists. I'm not, and that's true. I get attacked far more by the right than I do by the left. I just had a right wing person dox my house literally the other day live on my stream and then threatened to come to my house and show up with a gun. OK, so it's like it is absolute insanity what is going on the right now. And I think we have to focus our attention on who the real enemy is. And listen, from my perspective, obviously I don't support Israel in any way, but will I work with Zionists if they want to work with me on solving the problem of the far left? Yes, you are allowed to support Israel. This is America. We are allowed to have differences of opinions, but if we can't put our differences of opinions aside and work on the issues that we have in common, then all is truly lost. And if the right is going to continue to do these purity tests of like, you have to support Israel in order for us to talk to you about the left, then nothing is going to get accomplished. I mean, this is something I've had to deal with for years and years and years, is the purity tests that go on the right. And I know you've had to do it too. Nick Fuentes has had to do it too. And you can see where the energy is right now. The energy on the right is not behind the Republican establishment. It is not behind Trump. It is like people like Nick and who are speaking to the issues that people care about. And so why are we excommunicating people and completely gatekeeping them from being part of the discussion? Why can't we just focus on what we have in common and then bicker about the rest later?
You're so right. You're just hitting the nail on the head. It should be the other way around. It should be, hey, you support Israel? Well, guess what? We got to defeat the left, because if the left gets into power, guess what's the first on the chopping block? So if Israel is your big topic, put it to the side for a second and deal with the actual problem that is really the biggest threat to Israel. Like, if that's your angle, okay, then you need to get on board and help us defeat the left and not have these purity spirals over Israel. You're exactly right, man. Just incredible stuff, as always. Dr. Carlin B on X. That's DrKarlynB on X. And what's your website? I want to get it exactly right. There it is. DecodeTheLeft.com. Decode the Left. You can follow at Decode the Left on X, at Queer Marxism, at Red Menace Supply. Incredible work. Keep it up. And we'll talk to you again soon, Carlin. All right, folks. We'll be right back with the third hour. And Lionel Nation joins us on the other side. Stay with us, folks.
Come on now, Bandit. We got to get this truck on the road.
We gonna do what they say can't be done.
Let's get a move on.
We've got a long way to go and a short time to get there. I'm eastbound and what a bandit run. Keep your foot hard on the pedal. Some devil mind it breaks. Let it all hang out, cause we got a run to make. The boys are thirsty in Atlanta, and there's beer in Texarkana. And we'll bring it back no matter what it takes. Eastbound and down, loaded up and
time to get there. I'm eastbound, just watch old Bandit run.
Abe, I think this is my favorite Alex Jones shirt.
Dude, I totally agree.
Founding Fathers on patrol. Washington and Lincoln rocking the latest Alex Jones shirt. Marching past America's monuments. Liberty is awake. Visit thealexjonesstore.com now.
دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد دركة دركة محمد جهاد
Reality starts here. AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
Days, weeks, and even years ahead of the news cycle. AlexJonesLive.com is tomorrow's news today.